This is a production of JetBlip.com. Special thanks to US Jet AA and Claire for their support.
Hello, and welcome to the Jetosphere or Jet AA Sphere podcast, the podcast about things related to the Jet Alumni Association community, broadly defined.
Hello, I'm Zach Piper. I was a CIR in Kochi, Ken from 2001 to 2004.
And I'm Stephen Horowitz. I was an Aichi Kariyashi from 1992 to 1994 as an ALT.
And my name is Joe Moore. I was in Sagaken from 2010 to 2013 as a teacher, as an AET.
And so today, for our first episode ever, we're going to get to the heart of things, and we're trying to answer a lot of really important questions. First of all, what is Jet AA? And what isn't it? Where did it come from? Who's part of it? Am I part of it? I'm pretty sure I'm part of it. And what are the different pieces of it? How does it all function? And should we really even care?
We're going to answer all of it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll give it a try. We'll see what happens.
I think we should care. I'm just going to start at the last question and go backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
We definitely should care. That's why we're here today, right?
We should care, yes.
Well, speak for yourselves.
Well, but before we get to that, we should probably talk a little bit more about who we are, what our relationship is to Jet AA, and why did we get into this podcast? Or why do we presume that we are able to even speak to such a lofty topic?
Oh, okay. Good idea. So maybe we can each say a little bit of what we know about each other and how it connects to the Jet AA and the Jet alumni community. Sound good?
This is a good test on if I've been paying attention for the last couple of years.
Okay.
Got it. Okay, right. Good. Got it. So who's going first?
I'll go first. I'll do okay. Zach.
Steven, you go first.
Okay, so Zach Piper. Zach, let's see. You were in Kochi. We established that. You are married to Katie Piper, who was also a Jet in Kochi. And
that's
used
correct.
To be my colleague at St. John's Law School, but that's not Jet AA. And Katie was the vice president for a little while.
That's correct. Yeah. Katie was vice president of Jet AA
in New York. And you have just been a very active member for a long time, I think, because I know I met you at least 10 years ago at an event or something. I met you and Katie when you had first moved from San Francisco.
I've been a very active member since I moved to New York. And for the past, 4 years, I've been a member of the board of directors for Jet AA NY as well.
Right. So now you have like official.
I've got an official title. Yeah.
Haven't you done the trivia nights for Jet New York?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've hosted events. I've organized Yukata pub crawls. If there's a karaoke event, you know, I'm going to be there. And I've hosted trivia as well.
Okay. Great. Okay, so that's Zach. Okay, your turn, Zach.
Excellent. All right, well, I'm going to introduce Joe. Joe here is a relative newcomer, at least of the three of us, to New York. Originally from, somewhere in California.
Yep.
And,
yep, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. And you were actually on one of the executive members of, was it Jet AA Southern California?
Yes, for 2 years, from 17 to 19, I was 16 to 19. I was the one of the co-presidents of the Southern California group, which includes Arizona. We don't want to forget about Arizona.
But Southern California chapter is the only one, I think, that has the co-president system, right?
I think you're correct.
And I think more important than all of that, though, Joe, is that you used to work, actually, you still work for Disney, but you used to be not only an employee of Disney, but you were a character actor for Disney, which I think is fascinating.
Well, if this is going out to anybody who is under the age of imagination, like we're in still where imagination lives, I was friends. I don't know if you can see me. I was friends with Goofy at Disneyland.
What?
So we're just going to we'll stick it. We'll leave it with that. I was friends with Goofy, Genie, Woody, Baloo, Brer Bear, Queen of Hearts, Captain Hook, Sully, all the tall ones were my friends.
Oh, I didn't know any of this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a great picture with Maleficent, I believe.
Yes, I do. Another have a good great friend. Picture with Maleficent. Yeah. from Fantasmic. 8 years of being friends with them at the parks.
Wait, now is Disney, is there a Jedha Disney chapter?
I don't know, but there probably should be. I think there's probably a few of us who work for the company. So we should start our own little breakoff chapter.
And that's
not a bad idea.
So I guess I'm next. I'm going to introduce Steven. And this is really going to test me because we've had some interaction, but not a lot. I know that you have children, or you just have, you love to color and put your own pictures up on your wall. I'm going to guess that from what's going on behind you there. I know that you have been a very active member in the Jet alumni community for a long time. In fact, I knew of JetWit before I knew you. So I knew of your product and your influence on the organization long before I knew you personally. I think that's about the extent of what I know about you, which is kind of fun now that I'm on this podcast with you, because then I get to learn more about who you are and what you've done with the community in your time here.
Oh, yeah. I remember meeting you at some, I think at a bar at a happy hour, and it was a number of years ago. So we've known each other for a while, but we haven't had a lot of chances to like sit down and talk.
Right. In fact, I think I might have met you at the precursor stuff to the 30th NatCon, the NatCon that was combined with the 30th. Were you there in the DC?
In DC? Yeah.
So I probably met you at one of those gatherings before that combo weekend.
Okay. Yeah. So let's see, what else? Well, I first got involved in Jedha New York, which Jedha NY, which then later came to be called Jitani, rhymes with Armani.
How apropos for New York.
John Huang, our webmaster, came up with that one. Anyway, I was the newsletter. I started as the newsletter editor in 2002. Before that, I just came to occasional events. You know, I was not anything. I was not involved otherwise. And I just wanted to be like an assistant newsletter editor. And then whoever was the newsletter editor at the time suddenly had some falling out with the president and resigned. And suddenly they were like, and now you're the newsletter editor, which is kind of how a lot of this stuff tends to happen. Then I stayed as the newsletter editor for 6 years until 2008. And I started, I did a lot of stuff with it. And I started trying to reach out to other chapters and realizing like, it's hard to make a newsletter. And why don't we share content? And I connected with Mark Fry in San Francisco and Elizabeth Sharp in Seattle. And they were active newsletter editors too. So we started sharing content and trying to do articles that tapped on other writers from other chapters. So that was kind of before, that was like pre-Facebook and a lot of stuff. But we were trying to kind of connect chapters at a time when chapters weren't really, we had no idea what was going on in other chapters. And then after that, I started JetWit. And that's when I started getting involved. I was like, oh, there's a need for something to sort of connect all these dots, because Jedha, the chapters, is very bottom up, like the 13 colonies. And all these chapters are independent and they're either doing well or maybe they're not doing well or they're struggling or whatever they are. But there's no top down. People would say like, there should be a something, but there's no something. And I learned that because I kept asking like, can I do this? And I started to realize there was nobody to say yes or no anymore. So I just started doing stuff. And then I got to I got to go to an international Jedha conference. The last, it was in 2004. And that was the last one where somebody from every chapter actually attended, which is just unheard of anymore. Like that was, they don't, after that one, Claire was like, we're not spending any more money on this. Like this is not a good use of our money because I realized like there was no central anything. And so I started doing the JetWit stuff. I was like, well, this can sort of connect chapters all over the world too. And that was sort of how I got involved in the job listings. And then eventually I stayed involved in a created role, like professional development with Jitani over the years. And then when Jessica Livingston, who was a country rep redid the bylaws, she created a board of advisors, and then I've been on the board of advisors for JEDA USA since then, which is really just a way to capture institutional memory and make sure, like, you know, we don't sort of make mistakes that you know, don't know how to solve problems that we should know how to solve as a larger organization.
Well, and I think, Stephen, that's kind of the impetus for this entire podcast, right? Is people don't really know what the board of advisors is. And so we want to talk about what is the board of advisors, but before we can get that, we have to make sure people understand what is JEDA. And even for somebody like me who's been involved with JEDA, I was involved in Northern California when I lived in San Francisco. As a member, I went to some events and been very involved since coming to New York. But I'll be honest, I didn't even know that there was a bigger organization to it. I didn't know about JEDA USA. I didn't know about JEDA International or USJEDA, which is a whole different thing we'll have to talk about. So I think it's really important that we kind of start with fundamentals and figure out, like, what is this organization? Who are these people?
Right.
It's mostly happy hours, right?
Is Seinfeld still appropriate? I don't know. Is that relevant?
What's the deal with... it's mostly, for most of us, it's happy hours, right? It's happy hours or whatever, you know, or the newsletter or the emails you get or the Facebook stuff or karaoke or something. Mm-hmm. But then there's people making stuff happen and behind the scenes a lot. And they change a lot. So it's hard to, you know, it's hard to have sort of continuity a lot of the time because it's hard to get people to take on those roles. They're all volunteer roles. And it's hard to get people to stay with roles, or they get burned out, or they just go on, you know, the rest of their lives. And so there's a lot of turnover. So it's a complicated organism. Does that answer your question? It's a complicated organism.
Well, I think that's a good starting point. Yeah. I mean, Joe, you said it as well. You were a co-president, you said, for what, 2 years?
Two years. Yep.
And actually, Stephen, I think you're the outlier that you were in a position for 6 years.
I was the newsletter editor for 6 years. I've never held an elected position in all my JEDA years.
But, yeah, I guess I never have either. Board of directors is sort of voted on, but...
Oh, yeah, I was on the board of JETANI, so I guess that's technically an elected position, but not really.
The thing, and maybe this is something to talk about later too, is I was technically elected, you know, for two terms in Southern California, but I was running unopposed.
Right.
So at that point, am I really elected or am I just, you know, confirmed? Like, I don't know.
That's sort of one of the tensions in an organization. Like, you know, most of JEDA's history has been, can we find people just to fill these roles? And then it can kind of quickly tip to more than one person wants to do it. And, you know, the answer is really, there's enough for everybody to do. So it shouldn't really matter whether you're elected or whatever, as long as, you know, everybody should be able to get engaged.
I used to tell my board when I was president, I said, we need to do whatever we can do to build a structure that gets people interested in being involved. I said, I don't want to go through another election where I'm running unopposed. I think that it's healthier for the organization when you have multiple people who want the one position, because then you get varying ideas and you get, you know, like more than just one perspective on what it is to be a co-president. And then whoever wins, you know, has to know that other opinion, that other viewpoint exists out there. And if you want to keep everybody involved, you've got to be a little bit more open-minded than just the one thing that you want to do.
I thought it was whoever wins rules with an iron fist.
Well, there's that.
Well, that's Game of Thrones. I'm sorry. That's Game of Thrones. Yes, that is Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones mixed up.
Right. Never mind. No, I think that people sort of assumed that because of my personality, I'm a little bit more forward. I'm a little bit more, like, when I say things, I try to, you know, be confident about it, that I would be, you know, sort of power hungry when I got into the position. And I'm the complete opposite when I get into a leadership position. I don't want to be there forever. I don't want to be the only voice in the room. I want to have that, you know, that communal involvement in the organization. And I eventually want to pass it on to somebody when it's time to go.
That's one of the challenges for a lot of chapters, actually. There's somebody who takes it on and it's very hard to hand it off.
Right.
That's a dynamic that comes up. But every chapter is a little different. Everyone's got their own.
Right. And every leader is a little different. When I handed off, you know, the position, and Greg Beck, who is also very well known to the New York chapters, and most chapters, I think almost everybody knows Greg. In fact, he appears in a lot of pictures when I look around at the different chapters. But you know, I told the people who kind of the next class, so to speak, I said, you know, what the co-president looked like for me is not what it's going to look like for you. You're going to bring your own spin to this, and it doesn't need to mirror mine. It doesn't need to, you know, like copy what I did. It needs to feel natural and organic to you. And in that way, that's what I love about the organization, is that with every different leader that comes in, it sort of changes. You know, Jitani and Jet Southern California, like they are what they are right now, but they'll be different with the next round of leadership that comes through.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask
you. That's a good point.
Do you know when and how did Jetta even start, and where?
I want to say. Do you know the answer? And you're asking, or are you?
Yeah, I know the answer. So this is a disputed question.
Is it Nancy?
It's less than 30 years old. I know that much.
Right.
No, more than 30 years old.
More than 30, because we had our 30th. Was it Nancy Kikuchi in Los Angeles?
That's part of the answer.
Okay, so I know about Nancy because of her, you know, connection to the Southern California chapter, and that, you know, she loosely, I guess, was part of, you know, kind of bringing together this sort of organization of alumni. I don't remember the details of it, but I know that she was involved, and I know that she sadly passed away a few years ago. But that community involvement with the local Japanese community was very important to her. And giving back. So in every year, there's a cleanup effort in Little Tokyo that Jitani or Jet Southern California is involved with, that is connected with her and her, you know, giving back to the community. So that's what I know.
Yeah, Zach, do you know anything? Do you know anybody, any of the founders?
Not off the top of my head. Now, you know, I think I probably met some of them at Jet 30. In DC, but I'm blanking.
excuse me. So there was three chapters that started originally. It was Southern California, Nancy Kikuchi. It was Northern California, and I don't know, I probably do know the name, but I can't, I don't remember it now, whoever it is, who was with Northern California. And then it was DC, and that was Paige Cottingham Streeter. And you guys know who Paige is?
Oh, yeah.
What do you know about Paige?
Only her name.
Well, I've met Paige before. I met her at the DC at Jet 30. And I've seen her, I think, host a couple of events, or she's been a special guest at different events.
Yeah. Do you know what her job is, like her actual job?
No, I do not. But you're going to tell me.
I never quite get this right, but she wears a couple different hats for some agencies or orgs that are basically under the State Department or funded by the State Department. So there's the Japan-U.S. Friendship Commission, or the U.S.-Japan Friendship Commission. There's the U.S.-Japan Bridging Foundation. There's CULCON, which is an acronym for this, I don't know, a bunch of leaders from the U.S. It's basically things focused on fostering the U.S.-Japan relations, and that's what she does now. But at the time, it was just her and Nancy Kikuchi and the other person. They went to, I guess they went to Claire or MOFA, and they got this whole thing set up, and they got funding for Jetta chapters, and they set up the premises for what it takes to start a Jetta chapter and how to get funding from Claire. And what I didn't understand for a long time is that the Japanese government actually likes this, because this is, I mean, the JET is at fundamentally a grassroots diplomacy program. So going on JET is really just the first step. The long-term benefit is all of us coming back to our countries, you know, doing things that keep up the relationship with Japan and make sure that Japan can have good relations with other countries. Very much a post-World War II kind of reaction, or fueled by a lot of the thinking that came out of post-World War II, sister cities and things like that. So the Japanese government is thrilled to have this kind of stuff. And yet Jeddah chapters are intended to be independent of the Japanese government. So there's a very kind of coexistence, a lot of codependence and things like that, a lot of mutual benefit, but it is intended to be independent of Claire and the Japanese government.
You know, and it's right. It's not just the grassroots maintaining the relationship with the US or the UK or whatever your home country in Japan, but also some of the events we do are focused on, I guess, educating the broader community about Japanese culture. One of my favorite events that we do in New York is when we go to Big Brothers Big Sisters, and we do different sort of Japanese themed events for the kids there. They're for the bigs and the littles. And that's always a lot of fun. I mean, that's sort of the great events that I look forward to every year. I was the chopstick challenge judge for many years.
Oh, I love the chopstick challenge. That's where you put like different substances like M&Ms and rice grains. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
What else? Other Skittles?
Oh, there's rice grains and beans and cotton balls. I mean, you gotta have it start easy with the cotton balls and the rotini pasta, and then get gradually harder with the little, you know, white beans and grains of rice. And then eventually we started bringing a stopwatch, so people would race each other down the table on either side. And you'd always get this one little kid who's been using chopsticks since he was two, and he'd just school all the adults. It was amazing.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff, like little things like that is part of what the Japanese government wants and loves about the JET alumni community, that we do those things. That it's a term we coined a while back called return on JET investment, you know, basically the return on investment of the thing. And that really sort of came to light, and the awareness of that really grew because what year was it? When the LDP lost power to another party briefly for like a year. Anyway, so we were like, okay, whatever. So the LDP lost for the first time.
Was that Koizumi?
No, I don't think it was Koizumi.
Okay.
It could have been. I don't know. I don't know my Japanese politics very well. It was in 2000 something. I think it was before 2010, but like late aughts. But anyway, so this other party for the first time in forever took power. And what I didn't realize it meant was that they were doing an administrative review of a lot of government departments. Basically, you know, power was shifting and power bases were shifting and resources were going to be shifted. And the JET program was essentially being threat. There was a threat that it might get cut because they were cutting a lot of things.
And that's when
Matt Gillum, who's our main contact at Claire, New York, and does all kinds of great stuff to support the JET alumni community and Jeddah, introduced me to Jim Gannon, who was a classmate of his from Columbia's School of International and Public Affairs, from SIPA. And Jim is a policy think tank guy, a Japan-US policy think tank guy. And he explained to us what was going on. So we set up so that he could write a piece in JETWIT and post it on JETWIT, and then we could start passing it around and let everybody know about what he called the JET threat. That basically we got to step up, and everybody's got to start making the point about how much return on JET investment there actually is out there. Because most of it is not really being identified, was not being identified or counted, or, you know, just because we didn't know. We were thinking about happy hours and just, you know, reconnecting with everybody. I mean, you know, we had great cultural exchange, and that's great. But, and that sort of first brought that to light. And then, a few years later was 3/11 and the tsunami. That really made clear the limitations of the Jeddah structure, sort of getting back to the idea of what is Jeddah. Because I remember Sri Kurlakar and who else were country reps at the time. Now I can't even remember. But that we were trying to organize something where all the chapters would kind of like donate into one fund. And then what they realized was somebody has to hold the money. Like, nobody's a nonprofit like, I think New York had nonprofit status and Northern California did, but there was no central anything to put anything into. And there was no central anybody to make decisions. The CRs, I kept saying to Sri, why can't you just tell the chapters to do this? She's like, I can't, I'm a country rep. We just represent and we vote. We don't, we're not executives. It's not like the it's like the Articles of Confederation, right? A really weak executive, which meant it was hard to do anything top down. So it was after that, and Jim Gannon had these great ideas about how, where we could donate and where the money could really be used well. And that was super valuable. And we eventually did that and gave them to some organizations in the affected areas. But it took a lot of herding cats and Sri and other people, you know, and I think they eventually put all the money through Jeddah, New York, which created a lot of complicated accounting for the treasurer, whoever the treasurer was, for the next several years. But it worked. But I think in the wake of that, Jessica Livingston, who was then this country rep, redid the bylaws and came up with the idea of the board of advisors, where something kind of in the center, some people who have institutional memory could sort of provide guidance in situations like that. Not an executive, but at least somebody that people could turn to, because otherwise everybody's turning and being like, what do we do? I don't know. What do we do? What do you think we should? You know, nobody knows. But there were people who had the wisdom. We just had to figure out how to sort of capture it. So anyway, wow, I just covered. That was a.
I'm looking at the questions right now.
Did we get all the questions?
What is JEDAA? What it is? What it isn't? What isn't this group? What aren't we?
Oh, that's a very existential question. What isn't JEDAA? We're not a
government. Like, we don't focus on politics. We don't lobby for the Japanese government in any way.
We're not a tax haven.
Right. We're not a tax haven.
We're not a religious cult.
No, we're not employees. We're just volunteers and members.
Ooh, but you know what we kind of are? I've thought about, As the workplace has gotten more unstable and people change jobs a lot and you don't have one job where you're at for a long time, so you have that long time culture, alumni organizations, I think, tend to play a big role in providing people that ongoing, consistent networking, social, whatever, you know, things like that.
We are continuity.
Yeah.
And we're a support group, which we've shown in the last 2 years with the we used to have the Monday water cooler events where people could just drop in on Zooms and talk and just sort of like gather and because we were all like, people were out of work, people were furloughed, people were working from home, and for the first time in the very, or if ever, you know, not going into the office or connecting with people. So Jet was that. Jet's network of friendship and ability to get together like that kind of created that social connection that people desperately needed at the very beginning of the pandemic, and continues. Like today, there was, you know, we had a Rajo Taiso today, which started at the beginning of the pandemic and has continued now every Friday since that began. That's, for some people, some of the only like social connectivity that they've had in the last 2 years, especially if they're not in the cities, if they're out, you know, in the suburbs somewhere, you know, maybe they don't get out as much. And so I love
Radio Taito. Monica Yuki's been doing that for a while. And if anybody else wants to join,
yeah,
you should. It's 11:30 every Friday.
Eastern time.
Yeah. It lasts like 10
minutes. It's a great event. People hang out and chat a little bit afterwards. Though admittedly haven't been in a few months myself, but for a period of time there, back before I was forced to go back into the office.
Right.
Doing well, and that's the thing, working like, from my living room.
It was just so nice to have, you know, it, like when you couldn't go into the office or if you were furloughed, it was nice to know that every Monday at noon or every Friday at 11:30, you could get on to Zoom and you could connect with your friends and you could just, even for a few minutes, just see what's going on, you know, be connected to the outside world. And without the networking, you know, that Jitani and Jeddah and everywhere else, you know, set up, that wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah, and I think it's so wonderful to have this network because people are in so many different fields, have so many different interests, but we all have that one common interest in Japan and that one common experience of having lived there. And even though every situation is different, there's enough similarities that you can walk up to a complete stranger at a Meishi Exchange networking event and you can just be like, so where were you on JET? Start a conversation and have it segue from there into finding out that they're a marketing executive or a law school professor or whatever the case may be. And it's so great that we have that one common bond and can then just interact with so many people, different walks of lives, different parts of the United States, different careers. The pandemic has been terrible and I wish it never happened, but it has been kind of amazing to do these online events with other chapters. I participated in there was a trivia event for the Rocky Mountain chapter that I participated in or meant to, and then ended up just being an observer. or we've done these storytelling events, the JET Mothra events, and those have all been, or a number of them have been online, and you get people from different chapters telling stories and presenting, you know, their experiences. And, that's actually been really great. I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and that's one of the other interesting things about JET AA, because on one hand, it's chapters, which are geographically based, but it's also kind of borderless. I used to use the term the jetosphere to refer to like all the unaffiliated people out, people who are not officially connected with a chapter. You know, I think that's only maybe half of the JET alumni out there in the world. There's still, all this dark matter JET alumni. I use that to refer to the jetosphere, but the jetosphere is really all of it. It's the dark matter and the, I don't know, what's the opposite of dark matter? The regular matter? Matter?
Does it matter?
I don't think it matters.
It matters. It matters. That was the last question. Does it matter? It does matter.
Yes, JET AA matters.
Matters. Well, the other thing was pre-pandemic, it was great for me when I was moving from Los Angeles to New York. I kind of had an instant group of friends. Mm-hmm. I moved here and I had the JET community. And, one thing that JETs are really good at is making friends quickly, because we all moved to Japan and we all, we're maybe a little bit afraid that we would be alone, wouldn't know people, but the JET community there was so strong that it was like you moved there, you had your friends in your city, then you met more people. Same thing here. I moved to New York. I had all the JETs. I had events to go to. I was invited out to parties. It made the transition a lot smoother.
Yeah, same for me. When I first came to New York, Katie had actually stayed behind in California to finish her law degree. And so I was out here for 4 or 5 months by myself. And I'm like, well, I don't know anybody. What am I going to do? So I went to a JET event. And amazingly, I met somebody there who I knew from Japan. We were on JET at the same time. And that's it. Then I was hooked. I was part of the organization. And here we are today, a decade later.
Yeah, it's very easy to connect. And I actually didn't really hang out with JETs much in Japan. I was a town JET and I didn't have access to everybody else in my prefecture was doing. But when I got to New York, I started connecting with JET. But let me ask you guys another question. What do you guys know about, how much have you interacted with other chapters or maybe pre-pandemic? Or what do you know about anything interesting you've learned about other chapters? The ones you've been involved in, like JET of Southern California has got a co-president. That's kind of different and interesting.
My interactions with the other chapters have been mostly through like the NatCon event. Actually that was my initial, connection with the other chapters.
Like one interesting thing about JET of Hawaii, I remember learning a while back, is that, it's a very different dynamic because they have such a big Japanese American community. So that's a very big part of what they do. And they do something called Japan Bowl, which is kind of like a Japan related knowledge or trivia kind of question, but it's like a big deal. And so the JET of chapter there is always involved with that. And the other thing was, I think they've always had dues, and I think that's the only chapter that's ever had that set up. And it works and makes sense for them because of how, what their set, whatever their dynamic is and whatever their or their community works there. So very different than some of the other chapters. I always thought that was interesting.
I always wondered why there wasn't some kind of a small, very small, like annual dues that the chapters, you know, would charge, just because there were things that we wanted to do. And, you know, we do get some money from the, you know, from Claire and the Japanese government. But my thought for like future planning was, when I was co-president, was why don't we build up a structure where we can fund ourselves in the rare, you know, situation that the Japanese government decides to stop supporting us for whatever reason. Like you said, there were, you know, a couple years ago, or maybe more than that, there was a fear that there would be a lack of support from the Japanese government. You know, if they were going to stop supporting the JET program, they might also, and most likely, would stop supporting the JET alumni associations. And so, yeah, I always wondered why more people didn't charge dues.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, the money we get from the Japanese government, you can only use it for very specific things as well.
Right.
So right, if you want to do any events that are outside those, you know, preset buckets, you're not right. able to. You can't fund them with the Claire money or the Japanese government money.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons is because that chapters don't want to create barriers. Chapters are worried about getting people engaged, so
right.
they don't want to put any barriers or speed bumps in the way of that. That mm-hmm. said, I think it was JETA Northern California that first pioneered and started doing something where at the end of things they'd say, and if you want to donate $5 for this or whatever, you know, so voluntary donations to just, and I think that would bring in a little bit of money. On the other end of the spectrum, I remember hearing about JETA UK at one point. This is a number of years ago, and I think there's been a lot of turnover, so I don't think any of the same people are involved. But and JETA UK is interesting because unlike the US, like there's just one chapter for the whole country. Mm. There's not like JETA, I don't know, maybe there's JETA Scotland and JETA Ireland, but there's not like JETA Southern, you know, England and JETA London. And JETA, like it's just one.
Right.
But the people who had gotten involved with it wanted it to be more like a Harvard club, more like an exclusive club where you had to pay not insignificant dues and stuff like that. And I think it never worked out. And I always thought that kind of went against, I get the idea of wanting to do that and wanting to make it feel prestigious and not like a drinking club, you know, or wanting to kind of raise the cachet of what JETA is, but it just can't get critical mass. And it kind of goes against the open, inclusive spirit.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I think people have experimented with and tried, but that is an issue, funding and sort of how to generate that.
What in this kind of new world, you know, taking all that into kind of account, how do either of you see JETA, whatever we're calling it? How do you see it's like, what does the future look like for the group? How do we keep how do we get the new people involved if we can't do in-person events where we're doing it online? How do we, you know, cultivate the new, you know, group of leadership that comes forward?
That's a good question. I think part of it is a lot. You kind of have to front load with the pre-departure, right? Mm-hmm. Make sure that the people going off on JET are aware of who we are and the resources available to them when they come back. Now, I understand once you've gone off and you've started your adventure in Japan, you might forget everything that happened ahead of time. But we've done that, I think, very well. And I think a lot of chapters do it as well, is they set up pre-departure seminars where they talk about, you know, different parts of Japanese culture, etiquette that you should keep in mind when you go over, you know, doing breakout sessions for, okay, you're going to be in a Naka JET. That's not the same as being a big city JET. It's a very different
right.
experience. And so getting them before they even go, instilling in them this idea that, okay, here's this organization that's going to support me and maybe I would want to support the next group coming up, but also, you know, try to capture them as soon as they come back. Now, I don't know how we capture them when they come back in this,
that is one of the,
you know, COVID world,
right?
Pandemic land.
I know that, you know, without naming chapters, there are chapters out there that, you know, struggle to find leadership. And, you know, it's tough, especially right now, because a lot of people don't want to go out and meet in person. You know, a lot of people don't feel comfortable. A lot of places can't because there are still restrictions. So, yeah, how do you do that in a virtual world?
It makes it a lot harder when you're not meeting people and getting to know people. It's hard to figure out, you know, because a lot of times the way you find new leaders is the president or whatever gets to know some people and is like, hey, how'd you like to be president? It's not like there's a team of people and they're all trying to, you know, like, I want to be president. I want to be president, you know. All right. But one of the challenges, it was interesting. One of the challenges I learned of getting the new jets, like the pre-departure orientation is kind of the best way because Claire or whatever organization can't give out that information.
Right.
In a certain way. And then when everybody comes back, people come back achi-kochi, right? Like they don't come back in all one, you know, one airplane like when we went there. So it's also, you know, social media helps a lot, but it's, you know, it's hard to get. I always thought there should be that MOFA or somebody should create a jet, like universities create, like, you know, whatever, like upenn.edu, you know, alumni.upenn.edu kind of address. They should create one that's like jet.aichi.jp or whatever. And then that's like your address and you can use that for the rest of your life. Mm. And then from the chapter perspective, it's easy to figure out what prefecture people are in. Or from the Claire and Rome, I know that too, because the prefectures also want to know, you know, how much did it help our prefecture to have jets? Because a lot of prefectures have gone to the contract, private contracting organization.
Right.
So return on jet investment matters, not just in the big picture, but also at the prefectural or the local level. It can actually make a big difference. Anyway, I don't need to get all into that. But
I always thought too, as far as like, you know, there's that initial point of contact at the pre-departure and then, you know, then they go to jet. And like you said, Zach, they sort of get into their world of jet, you know, be living in Japan and they kind of forget about the alumni. I mean, I did. I forgot about the Alumni sure. Association when I went to Japan. And
a lot of beer flows.
A lot of beer. Well, you know, we'll save that for the cutting room floor of the conversation. but I always wondered why as a leader when I came back, why we didn't have near constant communication with the AJET organization, the overarching, you know, organization in Japan. And why, you know, they have touch points and access to the current jets. And if we were in, you know, if we had kind of a stronger relationship with them, then we could still maybe, you know, do like an annual check-in where we check in with them and then they disseminate like a newsletter or something from, you know, like here's a card from home from your Jet Alumni Association. Check in.
Due to technical difficulties, we had to suddenly end this conversation. But we will continue in a subsequent episode. Thanks for listening to Jet Spirit Podcast, a production of JetWit.com. Special thanks to our friends at USJAA and Claire for their support.